So I thought this morning I would speak on a verse, or two verses, a section in Srimad Bhagavatam, where Kapila Dev is describing to his mother Devahuti the process of devotional service, and specifically where one's attention should go when practicing devotional service. Because Kapila Dev appeared as an incarnation of the personality of Godhead in the first of the four yugas, in fact, at the very beginning stage of Satya Yuga. And during Satya Yuga, the primary means for achieving spiritual perfection was what? The process of meditation. And meditation upon what or whom?
Krishna
or Super Soul. Yogis would fix their mind, just like Dhruva did, because that was also, Dhruva Maharaj, was also in Satya Yuga, and he was engaged in that process by Narada Muni, and he was he did many things. There were austerities, like extreme austerities that he performed, but controlling the mind and controlling the senses is necessary for any age. It was just kind of extreme in Satya Yuga compared to what we're capable of. He had mantra. He had received mantra from Narada Muni. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And the process of meditation was given to him, and unto whom he was to meditate, upon whom he was to meditate, of course, the personality of the mantra, Vasudeva, and Vasudeva indicates Krishna. Dhruva was meditating on the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Lord, the Lord of the heart, and he became fixed in trance upon the Lord of the heart. So, back to Kapila Dev, it's the same yuga, Satya Yuga, and it's the same process for achieving spiritual perfection. Dhyayate, meditation. So he's, the emphasis in his teachings is going to Supersoul, fixing his mind on Supersoul, and stepping back again. Kapila Dev is especially known for his teachings of what?
Sankhya.
Sankhya. Sankhya means to count. Sankhya yoga or Sankhya philosophy, same as you find in the first instructions that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, is Sankhya. That's categories of matter, categories of spirit. We belong to the category of spirit. The discernment of what we are not and what we are. And the conclusion of that teaching is, now that you know that you belong or we belong to the category of spirit, fix your mind upon the Supreme Spirit. It's a different yuga, but it's the same message. And what's the purpose of fixing your mind upon the Supreme Spirit? Well, it's devotional service. So it's in the section I've been reading from, chapter 29, it's the third chapter where he's describing devotional service. So it's, although it's Satya Yuga and meditation is the process, and he teaches Sankhya philosophy, he's teaching their subsets of, or their elements of, bhakti. Because it's by bhakti that one can understand Krishna. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyamam abhijanati Yavanyas Chasmi Pratvatama. And the purpose of all the Vedas is to know Krishna, and the way to know Krishna is through bhakti. Vedaish desire vayar ahameva vedyo. By Krishna, and by the Vedas, Krishna is to be known. But that's what Kapila's not teaching something else. He's teaching how to know who you are. Maybe some of you saw, if not, you'll see it during the day today, Yadubar, the little trailer that Yadubar put together for his Acharya film. And part of the trailer scene is this aerial video of showing the skyline from above, like a helicopter view of Manhattan skyline. You see the rooftops of buildings and the spires of buildings. And it's apparently some kind of a radio interview. So the interviewer says, Swamiji, is that you? Are you on the line?
Yes.
I have a question for you. What is the message that you would like to give with this Krishna consciousness movement? You should know yourself. We are covered by a material body, but that covering is not the self. The self is the spirit soul, the eternal part and parcel of the Supreme. Then the interviewer says, so, know yourself, that is the goal? Yes. Really nice. So, quite simple, you know, like know yourself. But when people undergo this self-actualization and all these self-help literatures, abundant, I don't know about these things, but people that watch, you know, what's popular out there in the book section and bookstores, it's self-help books. So who are you without a transcendental perspective is not who are you. It's misleading. It's unfortunate. So Kapila Dev wants same thing that Prabhupada said he came to deliver. Who are you? So self-realization and God-realization, they're not separate. It's not impersonalism of your God. And just a little anecdotal sharing. I'm losing track of time, but I think it was Monday of this week. Yes. I was at the University of Texas. In Austin, Texas. And there was a program at the university, and during the questions and answers session, there were three different persons coming from a different channel or voice that were sincere, asking sincere questions about they didn't use the same language, but isn't it in the ultimate analysis that we're God? Or, it's all one. In the ultimate analysis, it's all one. Just different language. And one of the devotees that's read Prabhupada's books, students, said, you know, I like the way you answered. You didn't confront them. But this pervasiveness of impersonalism and voidism, it's not just somewhere in South India, of Sringeri Math, or somewhere over there in the Far East that people, you know, they think everything ultimately is void. It's Nirvisheshu Shunyavadi Paschatya in the Western countries. It's not just due to Eastern influences in the Western countries. It's pervasive. So Kapila is not only teaching we're not God, and teaching who we are as we're spirit soul, that the process, the section that I chose this section in part because it just fits very well with what I've been reading. He speaks something like 8 verses about deity worship. And with Griha Pravesh, one of the things that commonly comes after some time, when one has a home and has a family, is there deities somehow mystically appear, at least for devotees, so that to help fix our mind on the form of the Lord. And he very kindly accepts a form that we can see and we can worship. I'm going to be speaking about this a little bit in Boston Common because something in relation to Ratha Yatra, whatever I want. Very well organized. So, the discussion by Kapila is, you know, the beginning, intermediate, and advanced stages of bhakti, because he's speaking about bhakti. Then he involves the process of deity worship in bhakti, and levels of deity worship, beginning, intermediate, and advanced, or kanishtha, madhyama, uttama, stages of deity worship. It has everything to do with seeing the super soul within the hearts of living beings. Just to summarize in very simple language, those who engage in regular deity worship but who do not see that same super soul within the hearts of all living beings, then he says some disparaging things. The theme of those disparaging things is they bina darshanaha. They see things separate. And then he uses this word, they're separatists. Which, you know, in the use of the English language is not complimentary. And it has to do with seeing. Darshanaha means to see. Darshan. To see the super soul. Now, we're not so advanced to see the super soul like Dhruva was able to see the super soul. But at least in theory, that within the heart of every living being, there's super soul, and there's a means to realize that, and deity worship is part of the means to realize that. If we take up deity worship, not only with the proper regulation, because that's not unimportant, it's important, but the essence is not the regulation. The essence is the essence. The essence is offerings under the Supreme Lord. Then, at least in terms of philosophy or theory, that same Supreme Lord is situated everywhere. He very kindly assumes a deity form so we can worship him that way. But we should understand that form of the Lord, the presence of the Lord, is within the heart of every living being. And that's part of understanding who you are. As Prabhupada spoke in very simple terms to a man that was, you know, a reporter, a radio interviewer. How is this radio interviewer going to understand subtle subject matter? So it's to understand who you are. And to understand who you are means to understand who you are in relation to the Supreme. Prabhupada had a way of making things that are very important and intricate very simple. He said, seeing God realization and self-realization, they occur simultaneously. Like the rising of the sun in the morning. When it's at night, you hold the mirror in front of your face, you cannot see anything, although the mirror is there. Because it's night, there's no light. But as the sun rises, you can simultaneously see the sun and see yourself. Very simple. Self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously. They're not separate things. Now, if one is impersonalist, then self-realization means to understand I'm God. And I was fascinated. It wasn't an exhaustive list, but the very creative ways in which the same message was being said in different language. Poetic, high-sounding, like, you know, enigmatic, puzzling, wow language that just was the same thing, that, you know, we're God. And just for your, if you're in that circumstance in the future, there are different things you could say, but I'll share with you what I said. As I had answered before, there are three stages of God realization, and that's a stage that there is this Brahman, this all-pervasive spirit, and we're part of that. And that's a stage of realization. And then there's another one, that there's what is being advocated here specifically in Satya Yuga by Kapila Deva, seeing the super soul, not only within yourself, within every living being. So that the pervasive, then the localized, and then there's a yet further stage of personal realization, and the other two are resting upon that one. That's the topmost stage. So I appreciate that you people have heard about this first one. Now, there's a second one, and there's a third one. And they're all part of the same absolute truth. But if you take just this first one, then the personality just disappears. He becomes obscured. And then there's no love, because there's no person. There's no happiness of relationship, because there's no person. It's just your God. And of course, you're God too, and I'm God, and you're God, and all that. Love one another. Because we're God. And that is God loving himself. So, Kapila Deva is very specific, and Prabhupada in his purports naturally is also very specific about when speaking of the super soul, it implies there is also, there's an individual soul. And not only is implied, here it is explicitly, references from scripture, there's two birds sitting within the tree, and so forth. There's this opposition to a relationship with Krishna. That's why we come to the material world. So there's the materialistic version that there is no God, and then there's the spiritual version that there's no God. And those that go to the spiritual direction, it's the inclination like that is really easy. Of course, the other is also easy. It's more easy. It's perfectly natural. But it takes some a desire for, like we heard, it was really nice to hear the devotees sharing what they were sharing about, you know, just wanting the truth, whatever it means, just wanting the truth, like with a capital T, I want the truth. Last weekend we were in Houston, several of us, attending the ISKCON 50 inauguration, and one of the devotees that was speaking on the Saturday morning class, sitting over here next to me, was Bhakti. What's his name? Bhakti Sundar Maharaj. Thank you. And he just went off and describing how he came to Krishna consciousness. I had to tug on his sleeve because he was really into the story. Back to the topic. But it's the relevant part I want to make mention of is he understood from his previous life, he went through this whole story of his previous life and how it was confirmed what his previous life was, etc. That he's continuing in this life from a previous life, as we're all continuing from our previous life, but he was something of a yogi, but had become deviated by that association. And in this life, he, in his 8 children before he was born, died shortly after birth, so his mother and father prayed to God, if you allow this a child to be born, we will offer him to your service. And that was their consciousness when conceiving Bhakti Sundar Maharaj. So that was what happened. He was in a monastery, something like a Jesuit monastery, when he was a teenager, and he read in the Bible, man is created in the image of God. So he asked the priest, man is created in the image of God. What's the image of God? You follow? And the priest said, nobody knows. And Bhakti Sundar wasn't happy with that answer. So he left the monastery searching for what is the image of God. It's this inquisitive spirit that carries one into, getting an answer. The Bible teaches, he didn't repeat this, but I remember this from childhood, seek and ye shall find, which is atato brahmajigyasa. If you don't ask the questions, even if the answer is standing right in front of you, you won't see it. The inquisitive spirit is necessary. Who am I? And what is the image of God? And all those fundamental questions that are so important that people are too busy because the material energy keeps us very busy. And we're distracted from core essential questions. So the core essential question of who am I leads to, I am of this spiritual, not material dimension. And then further, there's this supreme spirit that I should fix my mind upon. When engaging in deity worship specifically is the section, 8 verses. When one doesn't see like that, one is a dina-darshana. There's other terms. And, with that dina-darshana comes other embarrassing qualities. Like envy, specifically mentioned. And other, things that we struggle with because we didn't, have to go to the root. You'll deal with the symptoms and not with the root. Like, allopathy. It suppresses the symptoms. Besides, the side effects are worse than the symptoms. the disease continues to grow. It just covers the symptoms. So we have to go to the root. And we won't go to the root if we don't ask the questions even, it's right in front of us. The inquisitive spirit is essential. And then connecting that inquisitive spirit with the proper source of descending knowledge, no small thing. We're so fortunate, we just kind of bumped into it. Or some merciful event happened and someone gave that opportunity to us. Or maybe some of us have been through, knocking on so many doors, like Bhakti Sundar Maharaj was saying, so many, 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 so many. So many. It's the spiritual marketplace has so many options. It's been made so easy for us. Without wading through the mirrors and the smoke and the apparitions. And we're so fortunate. We're protected by that good mercy. Just literally one verse and then it goes back a little bit from chapter 29. Kapila Dev uses a metaphor, really nice one, that's why I want to read it. He's making a comparison to wind or air carrying aroma. And so similarly, the mind picking up super soul. Here's the verse. As the chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, that's like we're over here, the air is contacting something, bad smell, good smell, garbage dump or a botanical garden, and the air carries that fragrance and it comes in contact with the sense of smell, so over here similarly is the mind, that can perceive the super soul. Similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service and Krishna consciousness can catch the supreme soul who is equally present everywhere. Then, he goes to the example of deity worship, which is one of the primary angas of bhakti. So, engaging in deity worship properly, or saying, chanting the holy name, or serving the devotees, or any of the processes of bhakti, if done with this proper seed of sincere desire to connect in our relationship with the Supreme Lord, or even may not know that's the ultimate goal, just the sincere desire to reach truth with a capital T, just like what Rangavati was saying in her little talk on the boat. So nice. And Krishna brought her to the truth with a capital T. Now there were instruments, because that's how Krishna works. He works through those empowered by him to bring us to him. And there can be a whole network of persons, not just a singular person. So that's this one metaphor. Now, here's another one. So this is verse 26 and 27 from chapter 29, Explanation of Devotional Service. Kapila says to Devahuti, as the blazing fire of death, I, speaking to his mother, because like Kunti, who understood Krishna was the super soul, Devahuti understands Kapila is the Supreme Lord. She's not confused. She's very clear. So he's speaking first person. I, as the super soul, so time, we know from Bhagavad Gita, time destroys everything. Kalosmi. I am time, the destroyer of everything. So as time, or as the super soul, or I, Devahuti, as the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear to whoever makes the least discrimination between himself and other living entities because of a differential outlook. Then, again, the language is dina, drisha. This differential outlook, the foundation of that is failing to see Krishna within. Not necessarily literally as with these eyes to see Krishna, because that's not how you see Krishna. But, resonating with the truth, the tattva, the reality, the Krishna is within. If we don't see like that, then we're going to see some other way, and we see the other way. We see in terms of bodies, and then you see in terms of bodies, and it gets into this us and them thing. I like, I don't like. Raga, dvesha. Seeing on the material platform, which stems from the spiritual platform, the spiritual mistake. Short purport. There are bodily differentiations amongst all varieties of living entities, but a devotee should not distinguish between one living entity and another on such a basis, semicolon. A devotee's outlook should be that both the soul and the super soul are equally present in all varieties of living entities. So, Pandita Samadarshana. You know Bhagavad Gita verses? Vidyavanaya Sampane. You know that verse? Does your sister know that verse? Ramani Kavihasani Shuni Chaiva Supake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. When you go home today, you can learn that verse. your sister too. Nice verse. It's a good and important verse. Pandita means learned. Darshana means to see. A learned person sees with equal vision. Sama darshana. Maybe some of you know Mother Kalini, who just left her body very recently. We held a little ceremony for her in her honor. She was living in upstate New York, in the same place where Satsrup Maharaj is, because Satchisutta bought a house for Satsrup Maharaj and bought a house for Mother Kalini. And she stayed and she had her own place and he looked after her. So he did so from earnings that he's developed from a record label called Equal Vision Records, coming from Samadarshana. Mm-hmm. He does a lot of other things besides records. Like, there's a big warehouse that he has gobs of silk screening, t-shirts, and this and that. But anyway, Samadarshana, seeing with equal vision. And seeing with equal vision, Vidya, Vinaya, Samhane, Brahmani, Brahmana, Gavi, elephant, Gavi,
cow,
and Hastini, elephant. Vidya, Vinaya, Samhane, Brahmani, Gavi, Hastini, Shuni, Chaiva, Sapakincha, Pandita, Samadarshana. That's the opposite. So seeing with Vina is just seeing the body. Seeing with equal vision is there's a soul within. So you see the soul within, doesn't mean, you know, you have a very, very high power magnifying lens and you can see the soul, because the soul is beyond that, even in dimension. But it means, you know, with knowledge you can see. So even with knowledge that you can see, there are differences, as Prabhupada is saying, and you relate according to those differences. That is, in relation to this verse, Prabhupada would say, if you see a lion, you don't go and embrace the lion. You do something else in relation to the lion. Your behavior is appropriate for the differentiations, but you don't see, oh, the lion is the body, or this person, that person is the body, because you get into that and all this ugliness of material struggle and attraction, repulsion, and us and them, and friends and enemies, and all the unpleasantries of material existence rules. I'm a little concerned about you leaning against that railing. If you had to happen to fall over backwards, that would be would hurt the railing. spiritual vision. He's imparting to Devahuti spiritual vision. We'll go way back to verse chapter 25. This is 29. He's still answering the question that she asked in the early part of chapter 25, which is a question we should be asking, which is, how do we, Kapila Dev, my dear son, you're the Supreme Lord. Can you please help me understand how to become relieved from undue attachment to family? No. She's not overwhelmed by undue attachment. She's a perfected person. She's speaking in that way. Kapila smiles if she asks the question. And Vishwanath says, my dear, Kapila is thinking, my dear mother, why are you speaking like this? You're my mother. I'm the personality of Godhead, and I'm your son. So this is our relationship. Why are you speaking like this? If you're speaking like this, I understand, because others struggle with this. And you want for their welfare. Okay, so now I understand. I'll give the sentence extensive discussion. My goodness. And it continues. So it's not we should be non-caring. That's not the advocacy. The advocacy is we should be fixed in transcendental knowledge, and then we can properly conduct ourselves according to the world around us. There's volumes and volumes to be said, and it's said in the sections. I'm just speaking now some principle. If we're going to be truly effective in dealing with loved ones, we need to be fixed in consciousness of the Supreme. Say the opposite. Just if we're not fixed in consciousness of the Supreme, our intention of being, of having affection for loved ones, and it's natural, it'll be misplaced. It'll be incomplete. It's laudable, but incomplete. Very similar to the very beginning instruction of Krishna's to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. By identification with the body, how are you going to understand what duty is? How are you going to understand who you are? How are you going to understand the goal of life? So, acting in inappropriate manner in relation to the body and those who are in relation to the body is very important. Scripture is filled with description of how to do that, but do that in such a way that super soul is understood, at least in theory, and the attachment for a super soul is the purpose to be fulfilled by whatever it is that you do in relation to others. In Devahuti's case, in relation to her family, in her case specifically, it's her husband, Cardinal Lee, whom she had served very faithfully and lovingly for tens of thousands of years, because it was such a yuga, duration of life was like that. He's now gone. And she's feeling... And you know, the application of that principle is substantial. Meaning, every one of us, we have relations with someone, at some point, someone is not going to be with us in various ways. We miss those persons. There's this vacuum, this space. Now how do you transcendentally handle that? Or in so many other applications. Circumstances of life, time moves things and things don't stand still, and then circumstances that are our happiness, they change. We know that these things are going on, and the way to handle them is not become callous. I don't care. The message is not don't care. It's not the message. But the message is elevate your consciousness to transcendence gradually. Not going to happen all at once. And then we can see things in the proper perspective, and the emotions that we feel towards departed persons or persons whose circumstances of life have changed or whatever the application is, we can still we can direct those feelings in a transcendental way, that which leads to the happiness of Krishna and our relationship with Krishna and that other person's relationship with Krishna. Somehow. So now the second verse, I'm going to have to end because the clock keeps moving. So this is text 27. Therefore, when you read Bhagavatam verses or purports, and Prabhupada says, therefore, it's a summary message. So, so many things have been said, now here's the summary of those so many things that have been said. It's very important. Ataha, therefore, like atato brahma jigyasa, just like that. Therefore, through charitable gifts. Griha Praveshas are occasion in a principal duty spoken of in scripture in relation to household life is giving in charity. It's the sacrifice for householders. Giving in charity. Being charitable. The reference previous extended, have references given by Prabhupada in terms of distribution of prasadam. You have a deity, you make offerings to the deity, prasad should be distributed. So how do you do that in our modern world? Have a separate plate for the squirrels and the pigeons, or whatever the sparrows, the robins. So there's prasadam distribution. I remember, I won't go through anecdotal things. Some householders understand this, and it doesn't mean that they use for distributing prasadam, but then there's, so like this festival. Massive prasadam distribution. Of course, it's for the devotees, but so many other people are receiving prasadam. And there's some cost involved, and so being charitable towards that cost involved for those who are earning is an example of how you may not be able to do it, from your house each day, but in principle, it's something that acts of charity makes the deity worship complete in terms of various things, but here distribution for shadow. Therefore, through charitable gifts and attention, as well as through friendly behavior, and by viewing all to be alike, one should propitiate me, who abides in all creatures as their very capital L self. It's not that, and Prabhupada goes through, he's not advocating impersonalism. That you'll see yourself as God. But you see yourself as part of God in the sense that self-realization and God-realization, they occur simultaneously because both are within every living entity, not just humans. Every living entity, soul and super soul, are there. So there's the downside. As the blazing fire of death, I cause great fear. Whoever neglects these principles. And then there's the opposite side. The side of light. Where one who understands these things, at least in principle, and then follows the guidance of scripture and moves their lives in that direction. Experiences their relationship with Krishna. It's because bhakti is a means for understanding Krishna. In fact, bhakti is not different than Krishna. It's Krishna's internal potency. Just read one part of the purport. There are two Sanskrit words used here, mana and dana. Mana indicates a superior, and dana indicates one who gives charitable gifts or is compassionate towards an inferior. We cannot treat the Supreme Personality of Godhead as an inferior who is dependent on our charitable gifts. When we give charity, it is to a person who is inferior in his material or economic condition. Charity is not given to a rich man. Similarly, it is explicitly stated here that mana, respect, is offered to a superior, and charity is offered to an inferior. The living entities, according to different results of fruitful activities, may become rich or poor. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unchangeable. He is always full in six opulences. Treating a living entity equally does not mean treating him as one would treat the Supreme Lord. Compassion and friendliness do not necessitate falsely elevating someone to the exalted position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We should not at the same time misunderstand that the Supreme Soul situated in the heart of an animal like a hog and the Supreme Soul situated in the heart of a learned Brahmin are different. The Super Soul in all living entities is the same. Supreme Personality Godhead, by His omnipotency, He can live anywhere, and He can create His Vaikuntha situation everywhere. That is His inconceivable potency. Therefore, when Narayana is living in the heart of a hog, He does not become Hog Narayan. He is always Narayan, and is unaffected by the body. I thought to speak on these verses because in this message, it very much relates to our function here. Griha Pravesh, the opportunity to have a home where the family can live together peacefully and carry out the duties of family life and transcendental life together. Because that's really what the duties of family life are, is striving towards transcendence together and different ways. The goal is to understand Krishna, although it's really easy to have that goal obscured by the complexities. But by regular hearing, it can be reminded that's the goal of anything, the goal of student life, the goal of family life, the goal of retired life. The goal of sannyas life, the goal of life at any stage is to strengthen, reawaken our relationship with Krishna and seeing things in that way, this opportunity being presented, if you take the opportunity properly. So that applies to now you have a home. Yay. Now how to use it. Lest we forget that regularly hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam so that remembrance will, the light will go on, oh yes, through all this complexity. I mean, it's not always turmoil, but it's usually complex. How to stay fixed in the mission of human existence, to understand yourself. And that means, it implies, understand who is God because we're in relation to Him. And then see others similarly in relation to God because they are. And that's higher reality is the opportunity of human form of life. Take it carefully, but especially with this hearing and chanting process, our Bhagavad Dharma. Discussion or questions? Yeah.
It's not directly on the topic of Dharma. One thing I'm really deeply hankering for now is to fix my mind upon Krishna. And although I'm doing a lot more devotional activity, I'm praying more and studying more and even speaking more about Krishna, I'm not able to get that fixity upon Krishna. That's really my earnest struggle.
It's on topic. Krishna says, one who strives by right means is guaranteed of success. And to know, so there's two elements. There's what's the right means and, you know, sincerity of striving. So we can always look to the sincerity element and are the means that we're applying, according to what the teachings that have been given are the essential elements there. So, you know, the consciousness behind the activities and the activities. The essence of those activities. And then the fixity is dependent upon Krishna. That's a wonderful realization with faith, we'll carry on even if, you know, the outcome is not apparently manifesting, because we have faith in Krishna. So then that the element of patience, enthusiasm, and patience. With conviction, steadfast conviction. There's this, I'm sure you've heard this story. There was a Babaji that was living at Ter Kadamba, not so long ago, during the time of Jagannath Das Babaji, and I forget his name. He was fixed with faith that by serving Rupa Goswami in this very sacred place, it's such a, we've been there together, such a wonderful place, surely Radharani will show her mercy. And it wasn't happening, it wasn't happening, it wasn't happening. So he decided, I'm going to leave and go to Mayapur, because the place of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's so merciful. So he left. And as he was walking down the road, two boys, one blackish and one very fairy complexion, approached him and said, "Where are you going, Babaji?" "And I'm going to Mayapur. Radharani is not being kind to me. I'm not getting this realization." And then they insisted, "You know, please don't leave. You're serving us so nicely every day." And then something like, I forget exactly how the story goes, the garlands that he had offered that morning were now adorning their neck. And he fainted. So how Krishna wishes to show himself to his devotees, it's in his hand, it's not in our hand. He's supposed to do it this way, not that way. It's not how it works. He does how he wants to do, as he knows best for the living entity. So with faith, especially considering these two things, am I striving, are the means by which I'm striving the means prescribed in this descending fashion, and the sincerity, because I'm using the word sincerity because that's the word of Rupa Goswami uses, the eligibility of a candidate for devotional services, the sincerity to be engaged in devotional service. Or like Rangavati was saying yesterday, I just want the truth. I want the truth. I want to be fixed in devotion to the personality of Godhead. And experience that relationship. So, according to Krishna's plan, that's how it will happen. According to his plan. With faith we continue. One who strives by right means is guaranteed of success. Bhagavad Gita. Anything else?
I have seen that devotees sometimes they are attracted to deity worship, but then they are not attracted to chanting so much. So, would it be a good suggestion to give that they should first bring fixity in their chanting, and then gradually reinstate the deity worship?
Or? Well, there are different approaches. Generally, yes, because the hearing and chanting is the foundation, and it leads to deity worship. That's so, generally speaking, yes. Now, there may be individual considerations where someone is inclined to this and not so much to that, or less to that. So, another principle is, become purified, become absorbed in what you are attracted to be, the devotional activity that you're attracted to, become absorbed in it. And then take strength from there and apply it over here. That's another principle. There's other aspects of devotional service, more common one that I've seen is person's attracted to kirtan and not attracted to japa. There's the young people. Not always, but it's a prominent tendency. So, what to do? Those that are role models for those who like kirtan make it a point to explain to those that don't like japa the importance of japa. I've heard from them, those that are the super excellent kirtanir heroes, and they purposely make it a point by their example and by their words to emphasize. I heard it directly from Madhava. Knowing this tendency, I make it a rule. Before I engage in kirtan, ever, anywhere, I'll complete my rounds. I won't have kirtan before I complete my rounds. Make it a strong, emphatic statement to, the people that are part of the little kirtan party. Before you take part in kirtan, you must. Anyway, different. Back to your question, certainly the encouragement should be like that. Foundation first, please. That's exactly how our founder Acharya engaged us. He didn't right away, didn't first give us deity worship, he gave us the regular principles and chanting. And the nine processes of bhakti, Archana, is following, not preceding, Shravanam Kirtan. Something else? Yes?
It so happens with the young kid at home, chanting is we give importance and hearing we give importance. And sometimes with the kind of activities with the young kid, sometimes I feel it is becoming more like a ritual.
What is?
Chanting is becoming a ritual than doing with love and affection. So I struggle hard because of the time constraints and the offers, and so how do we tackle that kind of a situation where we consciously put an effort to understand, to chant with a loving relationship rather than doing it as a...
Well, the very fact that you're noticing or alert to the difference of quality is itself an exhibition of your devotion, because some people may not recognize that, you're recognizing that, so that's good. And the circumstances of your life, the circumstances of having a new child in the home, it's not unfamiliar ground for some persons in Krishna consciousness, including persons in this room right now. And it's just something that happens. The responsibility of parenting for a new dependent is, I've heard from those that have children, you don't realize what that's like until you have a child. It's life changes. It's just a whole other circumstance. It's a whole other circumstance. And you can't do anything about the circumstance. You already invited the circumstance, and then... So now, certainly there shouldn't be resentment. You're causing disturbance in my bhakti. It's just the circumstance. And so you, husband and wife, or mother and father, you assist in the ways that work for your requirements of life to allow the other to, as time and circumstance permits, to chant a little peacefully, however that might take place. In a bigger house helps than the smaller apartment. You can go over there while the child is over there, and etc. Without leaving the child alone. And however, different families work it out. And it's just a period of time where having a newborn child is like that. It's just not like shrug your shoulders and say, well, okay, sarah, sarah. But it, just accept it rather than, and strive in practical ways for some kind of opportunity for chanting. And when, you know, the big one is when a little more regulation starts about waking and sleeping and those things, then comes, that's when, you know, the aspiration, some space opens, and make sure you put in the space, regulation, and, you know, return back to normal. It's not easy. From those that have been through this, they've shared, it's not easy. One's becoming deregulated to become again regulated and again fixed in a devotional way. It's not easy to restore that. It takes a lot of sincerity and praying, just like we heard. Accept the circumstance, make the best of it according to what Krishna has provided. And don't diminish the commitment, because the quality now by circumstance has become less. Continue the commitment. Even you feel, and you know, probably rightly so, quality just isn't the same because, and fill in the blank. But let me maintain this commitment. Krishna, this is my circumstance. You know my circumstance. I'm offering you my commitment. And Krishna will see that. And not with complacency, that's all I can do. You continue to strive to, little by little, incrementally improve the quality of. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
My question is, should we still be self-confident? Because before I trusted my judgment and analysis, so I always acted accordingly. But now I know my mind is material, so I kind of right now I cannot trust myself. So if something happens, I will go. I trust what you said, and I trust devotees. So if something happens, I will probably go talk to Brahma Rupa Prabhu. And but I feel uncomfortable because I don't trust myself. So my question is, where does the self-confidence go in Krishna consciousness?
Fantastic question. The answer is going to be a little subtle, so you probably have to like listen to the recording again or something. Prabhupada was negation of the negative does not mean negation of the positive. So self-confidence has been misplaced. Your question is how to properly place self-confidence. That if I'll give an example and say, you know, as this, so this. Like we did yesterday about, you know, strengthening the intellect and strengthening the mind. Remember that one? Yes, sir. So, if my as the example, my intelligence says, I really don't know. To be honest, there was a stage in my life where da 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 da, and then I realized I really don't know. So that wasn't a lack of self-confidence. It was just reality. I really don't know. I was writing a book of poetry, and I was going to see a publisher to have it published. And I couldn't do it, because I realized, it's mush. What am I doing? I don't know, and I'm writing a book of poetry to get it published to tell people, my mind. And honestly, I don't know. So I couldn't go through with the interview. But that didn't diminish self-confidence. It was, now I know that I don't know. And the confidence is that I require this bhuti, that which comes from Krishna ultimately. Tadami bhuti yogam tam yena mamo piyantite. 10:10 Bhagavad Gita, you can look it up later. Krishna gives that intelligence. That's your intelligence. That's the best intelligence, is to recognize, for starters, I don't know. And then my higher intelligence, it says, I need higher intelligence. Beyond me. Liberated intelligence. Perfect intelligence. That's your intelligence, and that's your self-confidence. Because you're using your intelligence. As opposed to the ego covered using my intelligence. What's intelligence or self-confidence that's not ego covered? What does it look like? I don't know. I don't know. I know over there is what I know. Now, what does it look like? Which is what your question is. So the answer is, I don't turn my intelligence off. I just, I'm dumb. I use my intelligence. I discriminate. Knowing that that doesn't hold truth with a capital T. I need this higher intelligence, and that's your higher intelligence. That's the beginning part of your higher intelligence and your self-confidence. And then as it matures, then it's a relationship with Krishna where you're familiar with Narada Muni. Narada Muni has complete freedom. He can go anywhere he wants, anywhere in the universe. Anywhere beyond the universe into the spiritual realm. He has complete freedom. And he's fully confident. He's not lacking in confidence, he's fully confident. Why? Because they have that relationship. And that's reality with a capital R. That's self-confidence with a capital SR. Because the confidence is not in me, the confidence is in this loving relationship, which is reality. That's reality. I haven't lost myself, I found myself. I didn't abandon self-confidence, I found real self-confidence in a loving relationship. That's reality. That's spiritual reality. I'm not there yet, fully. But there's where the self-confidence gets reposed. It challenges, it confronts the material conception of self-confidence. You can do it. I know you can do it. You've done it. You've done it again and again. And the same thing that everyone in the room here has heard, or most of us except for those that have devotee parents. You can do it. Achieve. You just apply yourself. It's atheism. It's the wrong kind of self-confidence. It's false ego. Pumped up and pumped up and push more air and pump it up. Just, you can do it. You're smart. Just apply yourself. You're not working hard enough. Go, go, go. We all know it's not just, I'm not speaking at this point just to you, it's all of us. We all know what that one is. Kartahamiti manyate. You're the doer. You can do it. That's false confidence. A little pin in that bubble and just the whole thing is gone. And it can happen like that. And then there's little ones, just like a little slow leap or, you know, something. That we, anyway, without embellishing. It's another paradigm. So I appreciate the question you're asking very much. It's fundamental. Self-confidence is recognizing who I'm not so that I can then begin who I am. My self-confidence is I have a relationship with a perfect person, Krishna. An eternal relationship which I've forgotten. Now I wish to restore it. And with that relationship comes everything, because anything I may have comes from that source anyways. I'm just now recognizing that. And because of that sense of gratitude, just like the gratitude that you feel from your parents for all the sacrifice, what to speak of everything? What to speak of things, even the soul itself, is not independent. It's an energy of the Supreme Father. He's the seed-giving Father of all living entities. How do I know that? Well, you can realize that, and it's stated in Scripture. So we're completely indebted to Him, including all the other sense of indebtedness to others. Where does the resource from others come from that they've given to me? From that source. So the self-confidence is I choose on the strength of Scripture and spiritual teachers to go the path of being in a loving relationship with Krishna, and that's my self-confidence. It's my higher intelligence. I haven't dismissed my intelligence. I haven't abandoned my independence. I'm properly using my independence. I'm properly using myself. I'm very confident. And experience shows me it's getting brighter and brighter. There may be some struggle, bumps in the road. That's okay. And each one of us, because I have relationships with most of the persons in this room, I'm aware of this one's struggle and that one's struggle and the other one's struggle. It's confidential. Awareness struggles. It's very colorful. And, you know, and essence of those struggles is Krishna's wanting our love. And He's wanting us to come again to Him. And so we're attached to something and He's pulling on us and we're holding on to that something. Say it again, each one of us, myself included. I'm not exempt. Krishna's testing me. I don't share it so much, but no, Krishna's testing me. Yeah.
Krishna Maharaj, I have a follow-up to Yuli's question, actually. So the self-confidence, if I understood correctly, is only possible, I mean, the true self-confidence is only possible to achieve through surrender?
Through a relationship with Krishna, which includes surrender to Krishna. Your true self-confidence is in that relationship. It's in that relationship. There's, just exactly, mana. There's a superior. Mm-hmm. And there's a subordinate. And that's a relationship. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. God is very great. I am very small. Therefore, I should serve Him. That is Krishna consciousness. And really simple language. So, it's surrender, yes, but you know, the bigger picture is, there's a relationship. It's a loving relationship. Surrender sounds like, oh my God. And relationship sounds like, ah. It's a relationship. So the surrender means I abandon this false sense of independence and I use my independence intelligently. I accept this relationship. I want to be in this relationship. That's my independence. That's my free will. That's my intelligence. That's my self-confidence. So you could say surrender, but relationship. Prabhupada gives this example. I like little boys walking down the street. He's holding the hand of his father. And here comes the big dog. Woof, woof. And the little boy just smiles at the dog, thinking, my father has always protected me. And in this circumstance, my father will protect me. He's not afraid. Because he's protected. So that's one of the six angas or limbs of surrender. Feeling oneself protected. Circumstances of life come. And they challenge. There's different ones for each of us because we have different attachments. So the surrender is, Krishna is going to protect me. That's one of them. And it's the relationship. My father loves me. And the Supreme Father loves me the most. You know, through lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, the coming and goings of different mothers and fathers, who's my real mother and father. He's like, I mean, I respect, but, you know, bhakti goes to the Supreme Father. And then we have self-confidence. And then I can, the light goes on of how to act properly in terms of, you know, the circumstances of life. Whatever comes our way, different stages and circumstances come. And you take away that, is what Kapila is saying here. You take away that, then it's fear. And it's other undesirable things. Then we then struggle with those things. And the malice, groupism. You don't have to be there. You can, but you have to, yes, the surrender or relationship with Krishna. That's the second. And then, when I'm addressing a circumstance that's not so strong in that area of relationship with Krishna, I can speak with compassion, like Prabhupada spoke with compassion to his audiences. And sometimes he would shake up the audience, and sometimes he would speak very gently, you know, according to how Super Soul Krishna inspired him. They're very diverse. Yes?
Perhaps on the same discussion, but when someone is praising, when someone is praising the trust in Krishna, usually when that gets translated to trust in taking guidance.
When it gets translated, someone screamed, they couldn't hear.
When that trust gets translated to taking guidance from those who are guiding us. So my question here is, usually what happens is, even when as a person giving a suggestion or guidance, even when we clarify that this is a suggestion, you know, it's finally up to you how you want to do it, what I observe is the person receiving, on the receiving side, because they translate the first transmission completely to the person, the tendency to immediately follow what's being given. And let's say if the suggestion is not the right, because as human being we can, you know, it may not be the right decision. So what are the things, I'm eager to hear your thoughts on, like, how this can be, you know, the conclusion can be, you know, resolved.
A few things. Abide by the truth. Meaning, in your case, or those who are taking the position of giving guidance, I know you say what you mean, which is, I'm not instructing you. There's a suggestion, something you might consider, decision is up to you, even as Krishna does with Arjuna. Second is, you know, the sincerity. We're always the opportunity for improving and making fewer mistakes is, you know, by a stronger connection with Krishna and so on, will always be there for all of us. I was sharing with somebody yesterday how even our founder Acharya, we certainly regard him as a liberated soul, perfected soul, but we can also see where he did some, he experimented. He did something, he saw the, you know, the fruit of that something, and he modified. And then he saw the fruit of that something, and then he modified. He wasn't bound to, you know, one thing only. So, in terms of making mistakes, we're less than perfect. And even in the case of a person who's perfect. So, it's, don't hesitate to, going back to the first one, standing by the truth and being in integrity with yourself to offer the best wisdom, not controlling position, but guiding position. And, you know, if something seems to be, in retrospect, it could have been done better, said better, you learn from that mistake. If you feel it's appropriate, you offer apology for that. Good intentioned, but, you know, could have been done better position. And then it's up to the other person. So then the third part is, it's up to the other person. They're also growing. They're also going to, you know, accept blindly or reject because they've got their independence or whatever it is. We, you know, that's their relationship with Krishna. We're just assisting their relationship with Krishna. They're making choices too. It doesn't diminish your compassion and transcendental care, but it's a detachment from, ultimately it's, you know, their relationship with Krishna. You're just for some time serving by Krishna's mercy in some way to assist them in their relationship with Krishna. Last question because of the clock, it keeps moving.
Krishna Maharaj, my question is, how do we cultivate discrimination?
How do you cultivate discrimination?
Without cultivating a critical tendency.
Fantastic question. Fantastic question. It's hard. Because the tendency is, you know, to discriminate with, you know, I don't like. Our own sensibilities color and cover discrimination. Krishna honors discrimination. You know, the faculty of intelligence should be used to discern this from that from the other thing. The modes of nature, for example. There's a discernment function. Discernments are abundant in Bhagavad Gita. So, how do you discern minus the judgmental part? Well, ultimately depends upon your relationship with Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't. He sees this and that. And he has love for this and for that. Name dveshosti na priyaha. That's Krishna's position. Well, but we have dvesha and priya. That's our program. And so the closer we become attached to Krishna, the easier it becomes to become Krishna-like. That's the transcendental answer or remedy for that. Just remedy without being partial. Come down a little bit. Knowledge and detachment. Jnana vairagya. Jnana has the potency. Transcendental knowledge has the potency of detachment from including that tendency of judging or being partial towards one and against another. A mood of service, humble mood of service, is a deterrent also. Because there's this situation, and then there's that situation, and then the next situation, and in each of them, the consistent position that we should take is the humble servant, and then the humble servant, and then the humble. So what's appropriate service in this circumstance, that circumstance? That's like the foundation from which we exercise our power of discrimination. How did that serve Krishna or be most pleasing to him in this circumstance, that circumstance? And then we're exercising our bhakti muscle by how to please Krishna while we're engaging the natural power of discrimination, discernment between one thing and another thing. What's the opportunity for service that Krishna is giving me? And they may not have the answer. But that power of humble service, the mood of humble service is very powerful. It protects one from going into that ditch of, you know, judging others and friends and enemies and, you know, when Krishna disappears, that's what happens. Humble mood of service is very, very strong protection. Then you can admonish yourself. If you find yourself going into that space, no, I don't want to go there. So then, go somewhere. Where are you going to go? It's like this question about self-confidence. If I don't go to the false self-confidence, where do I place the self-confidence thing? So same. Where do I place this natural power of discriminating one thing for another thing? You regret. There's four. This is a Jayadvaita Upanishad. four R's. Recognition, regret, rectification, reinstatement. It can happen in small, it can happen in big scale. Recognize, whoops, there I go again, regret. Then hit the reset button. How should I be thinking instead of that other way? And then reinstate it. Like it says, like Nectar Devotion says, if you make an offense, what's the remedy? Devotional service. I mean, the prior is, if you recognize you made a mistake, you regret the mistake, then proper engagement in devotional service. It may include going, it depends on the circumstance. Expressing yourself in appropriate response to someone that's you're discriminating against is you go and serve that other person or speak something of appreciation to that other person or speak in Krishna Katha to that other person. So it's, you know, puts a reset on the relationship instead of discriminating against the person. Or whatever is appropriate. And it may take, you know, hundreds of thousands of times of doing that again and again until we're in the right position of using our power of discrimination in a way that's elevated rather than a way that's going to be not elevated or worse, degrading, at least for myself.